Here with Secretary Alana Breutman, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy. On your way out, congratulations on your transition to New York. Thank you for some time today. What has been your overall experience working with industry over the last year during this really tumultuous transition time for the Defense Department budget and for the defense industrial base?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for that question. American industry is very diverse and has some terrific innovation going on. A lot of that innovation has been happening in the commercial sector because it's been so difficult for them to plan for the defense sector, and we just haven't had the budgets in the past couple of years to be able to procure big new programs. So while there are some things on the table the next couple of years in terms of large programs, not as many as in the past. It's certainly not as many as in the decade, the sort of war decade, mm-hmm. When we had to scramble to get new equipment out to our troops. And so industry's continuing to innovate, and industry's continuing to try to find ways to, you know, maintain its own shareholder value. And we need to work with them to understand how we leverage that innovation, even when we don't have the money to get it started as we would in traditional times.
Industry does complain sometimes that the term innovation can be rather amorphous, difficult to pin down. Do you think that you have done, you at the Pentagon, not you personally, have done a better job at communicating to industry what you're looking for and what the concept of innovation means for the Defense Department 2014?
So I think that's something that Mr. Kendall's working on very deliberately, and he, in the next couple of months, there are some very specific efforts internally that I probably can't discuss yet because they're still internal to work exactly on those issues. I'm not sure that it's that people don't know what innovation is. The problem is who funds it. Mm-hmm. And so there have been companies, for example, who've come in with some new products that we didn't fund for the development of which we didn't fund. You know, what they need from us is a way to support them in making their sales happen, whether it's sales to us or whether it's sales abroad. And so I think that's really what they're referring to is if we're asking them to put their own money into it, how are we going to support them when they do that? And so that's something that I've tried to do quite a bit in my time at MIBP, and it's been, you know, how do we deal with more exports and support them overseas? How do we deal with commercial procurement? And Mr. Kendall is looking at that with all the different tools at his disposal, whether it's IRAD, whether it's new programs, prototyping, or the procurement issues that I've discussed.
I continue to be struck when I listen to the earnings calls of the defense contractors that they seem to continue to believe most of them are they're going to be fine. It's going to happen to somebody else. I understand why they're presenting that to their shareholders, but at some point, one would think that the overall health of the base will suffer as a result of the contracting budgets. Is that a reasonable expectation, or what? How do you see that playing
sure.
out in the next couple of years?
Of course, it's going to depend company by company mm-hmm. and their own decisions. But I am worried that the large companies that have been able to look forward a bit more and have places to cut, to make cuts, have been doing that over the past couple of years. How much longer can they continue to make cuts before you're really down to the bone? And because, as you've said, they continue to have, the large companies, good quarterly earning reports, and they continue to keep margins up. But their revenues are not, in the defense sector of their business, is not necessarily up. And at some point, that delta is going to converge.
Mm-hmm.
They can do, you know, some of the companies will go into different directions. So some that have a healthy commercial component will be able to rely more on their commercial component. And our worry then from a national security perspective is that the talent that they have doesn't get used solely for the commercial side, and then you can't really get it back when we're able to procure again on the military side.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's why I keep coming back to, we need to continue to leverage the commercial side in order to support them and also support our innovation priorities. The smaller companies is where I think we're going to see more and more of it. There have been small acquisitions over the past year of they're sort of below the radar because they are so small, but it's some of it is large companies buying up small companies because they see that sole or a very important provider is just flailing financially.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take on that provider, but they're also taking on risk. And that that is difficult for them as well. The problem, I think, is in trying to give that message to the Hill, that message is not obvious because, you know, they do have pretty healthy earning reports at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I really worry that at some point we really do hit bottom, and at that and resuscitating industry is much more difficult than supporting it today.
Mm-hmm. It would seem to me that companies with a healthy commercial component long term would be a great benefit to the Defense Department, as I continue to hear you and Secretary Kendall, many other people talk about the importance of commercial solutions and commercial technologies. It would seem that would be a good move for companies that are in the defense business.
Yeah, I don't dispute that. It's not a bad move. What I worry about is simply that even within large companies, there's a healthy tension among different business units, and there could be a defense unit and there could be a commercial unit. And so once some of the engineering talent or the manufacturing talent is really, or capacity, the machines, et cetera, is moved over to the commercial side pretty squarely and is busy producing for commercial customers, that healthy competition also means that it's difficult for us to simply ask for it back,
mm-hmm.
even though it's in the same company.
Yeah.
It seems like, oh, the same CEO could just change things around, but they make commitments as well, especially with the kinds of systems that we buy. The commercial side of it, you know, when you're talking about producing an airplane, you're also talking about very long lead times. So these companies can't just turn on a dime either.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I really do think we do and ought to continue to encourage more of the commercial side and see how flexible we could be with our own authorities in order to leverage that side.
What are some of those flexibilities that you're starting to use more now and that maybe you would like to see your successors continue to use and encourage?
Well, something that I've worked on a lot is the commercial of a type issue, and that is you know, sole source procurements that are not squarely in the FAR Part 12 world but are close enough to it that they could be purchased under FAR Part 12,
mm-hmm.
that is not a that's not an area that is constricted. There's been reporting by industry over the past couple of years that they've had a harder time with commercial of a type procurement, and it's taking longer for price negotiations to commence. And that's something I've worked on together with DPAP per Mr. Kendall's instructions. So it's mm-hmm. something we're definitely paying attention to.
As you leave office, what are the things that you wanted to work on more that you wish you could have pushed a little bit farther along that you haven't had an opportunity to?
Well, this commercial of a tie piece is not yet a done deal, and it's something I would have liked to have done more on. There are very difficult, nuanced questions around intellectual property and how intellectual property is handled. On the one hand, the department really wants to have some kind of government purpose rights in order to spur competition later on when we're simply buying parts. But on the other hand, of course, industry wants to be able to recoup its costs and investments through intellectual property. I think there's a way to balance that, but I didn't get a chance to sink my teeth into it. I had worked in the pharmaceutical industry in the past, and so I'm very familiar with the negotiations over intellectual property, and it's
mm-hmm.
big money.
Yeah.
And I think we can get there. It's just a matter of figuring out the business case for both sides. The other place, you know, companies continue to talk about needing to rely on more exports, and we can probably make progress. We, the department, together with industry, making their export process a little bit easier without sacrificing national security. Now, Keith Webster, who runs IC, is certainly the lead for those issues, but there's a role for MIBP because there are all kinds of procurement and industry questions around how FMS cases, for example, are evaluated and a number of other things. So that's something I would have really liked to have worked on because I see that as an opportunity for U.S. industry to maintain its health
mm-hmm.
and also for us to ensure that our allies or friends are using our equipment and therefore there's that all the compatibility that's good for our national security.
But as our allies and our friends, the companies in their countries, as they contract their spending too, the companies in their countries are looking to us. So it's a more globalized market is what a lot of observers expect to see over the next 10, 15 years. Do you see that too? And is that necessarily a good thing for the department and for our United States industrial base?
I mean, we're living with that. We've been living that for a while, with that for a while, and it's just that the trend keeps going up. The nature of the world has changed. It's not just a defense base. Mm-hmm. The whole world is more globalized, unless you're an incredibly small company. And a lot of those non-heritage firms have enormous businesses here, have U.S. management, employ U.S. employees. So they're, you know, from an American economy perspective, it's good for the U.S. as well. And we put in, you know, all the security precautions that we need to with a foreign-owned company. So, you know, we satisfy both the national security and the economic perspective.
On IP, you mentioned that you believe there's a compromise there. Do you have a vision of what that looks like, or do you just believe that it is possible at some point in the future?
Well, I do. I guess I have a vision, but it's a very generic one, so I'm not sure that how helpful this is. But it just seems to me that, just like with any intellectual property issues broadly, you can have protection for your intellectual property, so basically a monopoly on that product, for a period of years. The trick is assessing what that number of years is. After that, in other realms of the economy, your product goes generic, if you will, and you kind of lose that monopoly. And we should be able to be in a similar position, mm-hmm. of you know, being able to give a company an opportunity to recoup its investment, but then being able to do the best for the taxpayer when we can bring more competition in. I think it becomes a little more tricky for the department when we've actually done a lot of the funded a lot of the investment in the R&D. But again, it's very similar to the pharmaceutical world where I worked, where NIH had developed a number of products that then had to get later stage R&D funding from the pharmaceutical companies. And they had, you know, over the decades had worked that out. So I don't see why we can't work out something likewise. It may not look like their mm-hmm. balance, but there's a balance to be had.
Just a couple of minutes left. Proudest achievement, thing that you will tell your kids and grandkids about that you accomplished while you were here?
Well, I think for the first time, I'm told, MIBP represented industry in a DMAG, and we were able to get funding for investments into industry. And so we gained a seat at the table that was equal to other, evaluations of major programs. So that really put the industrial base on the map within the DoD structure. So I'm pretty proud of that. I'm also really happy that we were able to have DoD leadership back at the table at the international air conferences. It was a big boost in the arm for industry and for our broader representation. And so those are a couple of the things. But, you know, some of it is just I know this sounds very sentimental, but I've had the pleasure of working with tremendously talented people in the department as well as in industry. And so that learning opportunity and opportunity to serve has been pretty remarkable.
You are moving to New York to join your husband as his career takes him there. What's next for you? What are you going to look for when you get up to New
York? I've actually accepted work with a humanitarian nonprofit. I'm going to be a senior vice president at an organization called UJA Federation, excuse me. And but I hope to continue to be a resource in this realm if I could be. You know, it's nice in a way. I'm going to have completely clean hands, so people can call on me and I could just provide solicited advice rather.
I intend to do exactly that. Thank you very much for
your
time.
Thank you.